We might know Haydenwood for Roses of Picardy. But probably not for this wonderful folk-based work that will no doubt be having its premier performances here in our region as the Northern Tier Symphony Orchestra presents a Manx tone poem. This and works by Mozart, Verdi, and Tchaikovsky will be under the direction of Robert Helmessy, founding music director and conductor of the Northern Tier Symphony. WVIA's Peter Wynn paid a visit to Maestro Helmessy in anticipation of three upcoming concerts in Tunkhannock, in Hawley, and in Athens with this concert program.
Now, you have a very, very interesting program coming up for the Northern Tier Symphony Orchestra. That Manx folk song suite absolutely intrigues me. I've never heard of the composer or the work. Actually, I know one of his pieces, The Rose of Picardy, but that's the only thing, and I never knew his name.
Right, yeah, it's Haydenwood. That's the English pronunciation for what the Germans call Haydn, spelled the same, H-A-Y-D-N. And Haydenwood grew up on the Isle of Man, which is interestingly situated. It's equidistant from Ireland, Scotland, and England in the Irish Sea. The ruins on the island, you can see if you look up the Isle of Man on YouTube, the ruins of people who lived there go back to 2500 BCE. And the Vikings were there, and many, many other cultures settled there, left ruins. And the reason the ruins lasted is because they're all built of stone. The island is just a pile of rocks, really. There are nice farms on top of it, kind of like northern Pennsylvania, where it's mostly rock, and we have about 6 inches of topsoil. But the Isle of Man is very green, it has a lot of rain, it's a very beautiful place, except for 1 week out of the year where they have this mayhem of a motorcycle race all the way around the island every year, and people come from all over the world to compete and sometimes die in this race. But anyway, that's not to do with the music. Haydn Wood grew up there in the early 20th century. He was born about 1892, and the piece that he wrote uses four songs that were common on that island. Two had words, one was a fiddle tune, the other one was partly a fiddle tune, and then the last one was the fisherman's hymn, which the fishermen sang when they came back from a successful voyage to celebrate the fact that they got a lot of fish and that they returned, because that was a big deal too, just to return from a fishing trip. So Wood put this together in a magnificent way. It's always been known very well as a band piece because it became famous for contest pieces because it's very difficult to play for a concert band. The orchestra versions are less well known. There's only one recording, and that's with him himself in the 1950s conducting. And it uses beautiful melodic passages, sometimes strung with a harmony part and even as many as two counterpoint lines against it, and always a wonderful bass line. So he really covers the complete scoring. The only composer I can think of that we know of is Ferdi Groffay that uses that kind of dense orchestration. It's different from Richard Strauss, which is also dense orchestration, because everything is melodic here, and each line supports the other one. So that's a really favorite piece of mine. It's the first time I've gotten to do it with orchestra, and I couldn't find the parts for a long time. There's no full score. There's only a piano reduction of the score, so I had to go through all the individual parts right in the cues in order to be able to conduct it and know what I was doing. And it just, I'm very happy to be able to present it. I've never heard it played for orchestra anywhere. So this will be a first, certainly for this area and for anybody who comes. I'm sure they've never heard it in this version. So I'm very happy with the piece, and the orchestra loves to play it. It just sounds wonderful. The fiddle tunes really make the sound of the piece, whereas in the band version, that's clarinets. And the clarinets don't do well on fiddle tunes. I mean, it sounds okay, but it's not the same as having fiddles playing. And so it's unison fiddles in some places, and just wonderful.
Well, how do you go about lining up the repertoire? Do you have to keep your players' capabilities, or is it you pick things that you know they're going to enjoy playing, or both?
Both of those are important. Since we're a community orchestra, we don't offer much other than the joy of playing really good music and interesting music that they haven't heard, or maybe some of them have played it in the other version. But yes, I have to keep always in mind the difficulty of the piece, where our strongest players lie in the orchestra, because that changes from time to time, although most of the orchestra is quite good. We have special sections sometimes that we feature, and the pieces are pieces that are in my background somewhere, that I've played them or heard them or conducted them in many cases, because I'm in my 50th year of conducting now. And a lot of these pieces are my third or fourth time around with them. But this one happens to be a first with the orchestra version. So I try to put together programs that are varied, first of all. I like to go to an orchestra program where things are varied. And I try to assemble pieces that will work together. Something that's new, something that's really exciting, something that's scored very large, maybe something that's kind of spare. For instance, the Mozart piece that we're doing, the Overture to Lucio Silla, is a very early opera of Mozart, 15 years old, I believe, 14 or 15. It was his second attempt at opera. And the overture has survived. The opera itself was full of intrigue between two royal families and et cetera, and all the good and bad things that go with that. But the overture is more in the style of J.C. Bach, Johann Christian Bach. A single fiddle line, sometimes harmonized with the second violins, a bass line, and inner parts in the violas as harmony for the most part. Typical symphonic scoring of that era, two horns, two oboes, two trumpets, timpani, and strings. That was the early symphonic makeup as well, and he used it in the overtures. So it's a nice piece. We're doing it as kind of a fast and very fast version. Fast version is in 4-4, that's the beginning. And then we're doing the very fast triple meter, or 3/8 time, conducted in one beat to the measure for the second one. And then we're going to da capo the first one because they're both short. So we'll get a performance that hangs together with this kind of the slower and the fast and back to the slower to end it. The opening is very, very almost fanfare-like, with the whole orchestra playing a very heavy, strong rhythm. You know, bum, 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 that kind of a rhythm. And then it kind of winds down into a very fast violin piece for the rest of that movement. And, of course, the 3/8 one is lickety-split violins, very fast.
Well, you kind of remind me of two things about Mozart. As I recall, about the age of 15 or so, he had studied in London with J.C. Bach. And that he was a viola player and preferred to play viola when he played in an ensemble. So I'm not surprised to hear you say there's some emphasis on the viola parts.
Yeah, there are two places in the fast 3/8 movement where the violins are going along, playing, 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 and then there's a little break and the violas go, dig-a-dig-a-dum, you know, just, well, I'm here too, don't forget me, you know. And it's really interesting to hear, and of course the violas get a kick out of it. So, it's very interesting music, and it's interesting to hear that early Mozart, which is so much like the music right after 1750, which was the music when Handel and Bach both died in 1750, and that was the official end of the Baroque as far as musicologists feel. And then the sons of Bach and several other composers in that era, Marcello, etc., came along and kind of struggled to figure out where music was going to go next. And of course, it wound up with Haydn, Mozart, and then Beethoven and Schubert, and that's where it went.
And of course, you have a romantic piece. Early Verdi, the overture to his opera Nabucco. That's quite a lovely piece.
Yes, it is, and it's interesting. Now, that opera describes the exile of the Jews from Babylonia by the Nebuchadnezzar, the king, and the two pieces that are used in there are the song of the Jewish people singing, bum, dum, 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 dum. But there's a beautiful, beautiful song in slow 3/4 time in the middle, that's a solo that's played by the clarinet and oboe and then by the trumpet. And then it returns to the theme of the Jewish exiles. And that ends the piece in a very, very fast rendition of the original in a faster tempo.
He's alluding to that chorus of Va Pensiero.
Well, yes, that melody is in there. That's the slow clarinet one. That's the slow one in the middle, yeah. That's a wonderful melody, and that's often done as a separate piece by choruses with orchestra on potpourri concerts. But it is in there, and it gets a good treatment. It also starts with a nice, lovely trombone chorale with tuba bass, and the whole thing starts out with a very nice chorale.
And then, of course, you have a very mature work by Piotr Ilyich Tchaikovsky. You're going to have a suite from his Swan Lake, a lovely, lovely, tuneful ballet, if there ever was one.
Yes, and it's interesting that even though this was one of his early ballets, it was a commission, when he got the commission, he went back to something he had written for, I believe it was his brother-in-law's children, It was a little suite of songs he had written out for them as a kind of a play tune to sing and play with. And he borrowed the tunes that he had written years before and elaborated on them considerably, and it became the Ballet of Swan Lake. The thing that interests me about it is that he pays homage to other cultures' music in it. There's a Hungarian dance, which actually includes a slow and then a csárdás, which is the very fast Hungarian dance. It goes from one tempo into the other. There's an Espanol dance, which is music of Spain, which has a bolero rhythm complete with castanets and snare drum-like bowing on the violins, that kind of thing, like just like the Ravel bolero. There's a Neapolitan dance, which is Italian tunes, and that has a slow Italian tune, cornet solo, faster cornet solo following it, and then ends with the whole orchestra playing a tarantella, all in one piece. There's also a Polish mazurka at the end of the whole thing. Now, it intrigues me, given that Tchaikovsky was living in the era of horse and stagecoach, how he heard all these kinds of music, and he must have probably only heard them once or twice. I know that he went to Italy, and then he wrote Capriccio Italien after that, and used the bugle call from the soldiers' barracks in that piece. But he gets so close to the essence of these different kinds of music, the rhythm, the harmonies, the melodies, and the dance tempos. It's just amazing that he was able to do that with so little ability to go to those places and hear them. Now, a lot of other composers in the 1800s were doing this, even the 1900s. You have Ravel writing Spanish music. You have Chabrier, a French composer, writing Spanish music. They're all traveling, but they're only going over the Pyrenees, and that was not such a trip as going from St. Petersburg to Italy, to France, to Hungary, to Poland. And, of course, Mendelssohn wrote the Italian symphony and was able to capture the sound of the tarantella also and the Italian harmonies. But these people had amazing ears and minds. It's kind of like what some of the European composers did after the jazz bands went to Europe in the early 1920s. They went there and played, and then Darius Milhaud and Ravel heard them maybe once or twice, and they were able to write music that was in the same style with the same harmonies without even seeing the scores. They memorized it, and they were able to internalize it and compose music in that style in one hearing or two hearings. It just amazes me, and that's what Tchaikovsky does in this. And all of those pieces I mentioned are in this suite. This is the longer suite. There's a shorter suite of six pieces. This one is eight pieces, and it has a beautiful opening, which is not the opening of the ballet originally. It's taken from the beginning of the second act, which starts with a harp cadenza. We have a wonderful harpist, Allison Simpson, who comes and plays with us. Has an oboe solo, has the full orchestra. It has a beautiful waltz. Again, he's got almost the Viennese waltz, although we don't use the same Viennese rhythm as afterbeats, but it's that quality of the waltz that was so beautiful. And it's true that there was a certain amount of musical intercourse going on between the French and the Russian courts, and he would have had some access to French musicians coming to Russia, I'm sure. But just his ability to take all these styles and make them perfect is really interesting.
Well, all this variety also must make it a ball for your players to have the opportunity to go through this music.
Yes, it is. And it's also quite a task to jump from one style immediately into the next. You have just, you know, about 10 seconds between movements and you're into the next dance.
And the best part is you don't have to know any of this stuff to sit back and enjoy it.
Yeah, that's right. But I've always said that, you know, audiences don't always know why something's wrong, but they sense it when it's not right. And they sense it when it's right, but they don't know why it's right, because they don't know the details and the intricacies. But they know, you know, you can hear if something's being played incorrectly, but you don't know why.
Of course, one nice thing is that your players will get three public performances of this same program, so by the time they're done, they're going to know something about it.
Yes, we're going to play April 21st at 8 p.m., Tunkhannock Middle School, 200 Franklin Avenue, Tunkhannock, Pennsylvania. April 28th, 8 p.m., also a Friday night, Wallenpaupack High School, 2552 U.S. Route 6, Hawley, Pennsylvania. And May 5th, Friday night, 8 p.m., Athens High School, 401 West Frederick Street, Athens, PA. So you can set your GPS machines for those addresses, and it'll take you right to those spots.
And if someone wanted to get a hold of tickets, what do? They go to your website?
The best thing probably is to call the symphony office at the number 570-289-1090, and we will hold tickets at the door for you.
Robert Helmessy, founding music director and conductor of the Northern Tier Symphony Orchestra, speaking with WVIA's Peter Wynn in anticipation of three upcoming concerts in Tunkhannock, April 21st at Tunkhannock Middle School, 8 p.m. start time, April 28th in Hawley at Wallenpaupack Area High School, again, 8 p.m., and then on Friday, May 5th at Athens Area High School at 8 p.m., For more information, on the web, northerntiersymphony.org, northerntiersymphony.org, and the phone number, area code 570-289-1090, 289-1090, area code 570. Thanks, Peter Wynn. Thanks, Robert Helmessy.